listening to the Newsmakers podcast from MLB.com.
This is the Rocket, Bill Latson. Welcome to Newsmakers. We have a lot going on today. We have former major leaguer Jeff Nelson. He gives his take on the Verlander trade and the Upton trade. We go to MLB.com's Richard Justice, who talks about Verlander's first start and the Apple Watch scandal between the Yankees and Red Sox. We also have agent Scott Boras as a guest. He talks about the changes he would make in baseball. Before the Apple Watch scandal broke, I visited the Red Sox and spoke to Dustin Pedroia and Rajay Davis. They want to go back to the World Series in the worst way. We start with Jeff Nelson, who has a lot to say about the trades involving the Astros and Angels. Enjoy the podcast. Jeff, thanks for being on the show. The Astros and Angels were able to make deals before the waiver trade deadline. How much better are those two teams?
I think with the Angels, you know, it's funny how their years progress, because you never really thought that they were ever going to be close to a playoff team or even a contender. And then they go out and they've been contending the whole pretty much second half. And with the wild card, as crazy as it is, they're a game and a half out from Minnesota. And Minnesota's another team that you never thought was going to be there. But the additions to Upton and also Phillips, I mean, you add two great veteran guys. And Upton's having a tremendous year. He's got a couple more years on his contract, which I think that's a huge asset for Anaheim as well, or the Angels. And adds a lot of depth in that lineup, but going along with Trout and also Pujols, and you have Calhoun in the outfield. So it deepens that lineup. I'm just worried about their pitching. I mean, if you look at a lot of the wild card teams, they really don't have great starting pitching. You look at Santana for Minnesota, probably one of the few arms that is really decent. Baltimore the same way. As hot as they are, I don't think they have enough starting pitching, but neither does anybody else. But I really like the trades that Anaheim has done. I think it really deepens their lineup. And it's definitely a threat. They're proving to everyone, hey, we're in this thing, and we're gonna try to go for it.
How much does this help Trout?
I think it's great. You know, Pujols is such, I mean, he's a Hall of Fame player. You know, he's such a great hitter. But now he's getting down into his career. And, you know, he's not as a big of a threat at the plate that he used to be. He's still, you know, still dangerous. But having Upton there, having Phillips possibly ahead of them in the top of the lineup, it really protects Trout a lot. I mean, this guy could be MVP again if he didn't lose those couple months with that thumb injury sliding into second. But it just deepens that lineup, and it gives Trout, or, you know, as a pitcher, you know, you have to now be aware of more guys in that lineup. You can't pitch around Trout anymore. You can't pitch or to get to Pujols. You know, a lot of times they'll walk Trout right to get to Pujols because they feel, okay, we have a better shot of getting him out now. Well, now you have Upton, and now you have Phillips possibly at the top of the lineup to table set. So I think it really lengthens their lineup, and I really like the moves.
What about Verlander? How much does he help the Astros? Is that enough?
Well, you know, I think it is. You know, Keuchel hasn't really looked that great. You know, he got beat up the other day against Texas. You know, McCullers is going to come back next week. You look at the playoffs, and they're going to win the division, and nobody's going to take them in the West. You know, they have fallen back, and they've made it interesting as far as home field, because you have the Indians and the Red Sox, and the win column are only four games back from them. So that, it all of a sudden started getting interesting, because you thought, oh, well, you know, Houston was going to have a, you know, best record in the American League, home field advantage through everything. But adding Verlander, you added that starter. You almost wish they did it before, right during July. But they didn't. You know, they obviously got the starter they wanted. Verlander, having a no trade, really thought this process out. Houston obviously happy that they got him. But now you have three really good, solid pitchers. You have Verlander. You have Keuchel, who has done really well in the playoffs. If he can figure things out and come back in September, he'll be good. And McCullers, you know, I really like their chances now. They have one of the best lineups in the game. They're going to get Correa back. They'll get healthy again. So I like their chances now. I didn't at first. You know, their bullpen's still a little iffy. I think that could be a problem. But, you know, as far as their rotation, and that sets up everything.
What about the Cleveland Indians? You know, for a long time, the Astros dominated. But, you know, the Indians are catching up now in terms of the best record. I think the Indians are better.
I probably would agree with you. And again, if you look at the Kluber, you know, he's not slowly, but it was between him and Sale, and, you know, almost thinking that Kluber may win the Cy Young Award. I mean, he's been that dominant. You know, if you get Carrasco, if you get Salazar healthy, and that's the only thing I'm worried about. And Bauer has thrown well. And if you get those two guys healthy, I think they probably have a better rotation than the Astros, maybe anybody in the American League. I really like their lineup. You saw what they did with the Yankees. They came in here in New York and swept them three games and swept them a doubleheader, which is really hard to do. They have a good offense. They have power. Adding Jay Bruce, they score in multiple ways. You know, so you absolutely love that. They have speed in the bases. They can beat you with the home run. They can beat you with a bunch of doubles and the gaps and singles. So offensively, I think they're tons better than last year. I would like to get Miller back. I'm a little shaky about what he's going to do with the little patella tendon injury. He'll probably come back the last couple months. But you like their bullpen because they have depth in there.
What about the AL wild card? It is a dogfight. I mean, anybody could win. I mean, I'm worried about the Yankees, but what do you think about the wild card?
Well, you know, the Yankees, you know, they really started not playing good baseball, and they got swept by Cleveland. Next thing you know, they've let Minnesota right back in it. They're only a game ahead of them as far as the lead wild card spot. Baltimore is playing really hot baseball. They're getting just enough starting pitching to win. Their offense has always been good. They have a really good bullpen. So you like their chances because they've been here this time of year, and they know what it takes to try to make this playoff run. You know, you look at the Twins, they were out of it. I mean, they were in it, and all of a sudden out of it. They trade Jaime Garcia, figured, okay, we're done. And next thing you know, they come back to life, and now they're playing great baseball. All these young guys in their lineup are just incredible. I think it's starting to pan out just a little bit. I think you're starting to see Seattle. You're starting to see Kansas City now fall back. Even though Seattle went and got Mike Leake, I don't know if that's enough. You would like to see Paxton and obviously Felix come back, and then they would have a good rotation. They have a good lineup, and their bullpen is decent. They're only 4.5 out, so you know they're not done until you know they're mathematically done, mathematically finished. But Kansas City's starting to look a little poor, but. You know, it's a great race. I mean, I love the two wild cards. You know, I think it makes it for exciting baseball. And now the National League is starting to pan out a little bit more exciting as well.
What happened to Seattle? Because I expected them to be the team of the AL West.
Yeah.
And injuries just killed them.
Right.
But what happened?
It is. It's injuries. I mean, you look at Paxton. He can't put together a full season. This guy's one of the best lefties in the game. Mm-hmm. And he just, you thought, okay, there for a while, finally this kid's going to stay healthy. He's got an electric fastball from the left side. Felix, his innings, I mean, he's been around a long time, and he's been the horse out in that rotation. Injuries have plagued him as well. He's not the same guy on the mound even when he is healthy. And, you know, doesn't throw nearly as hard. He's got to try to pick the corners. They have Miranda. Their rotation has just really hurt them. Offensively, I think they're solid. They can score runs. You know, they're not as weak as they used to be. Remember, you know, years past there for a while, they were always one of the worst offenses
yes.
in the American League, and now they're right in the middle of the road. So that's great. You know, DePoto has done such a great job as far as building that offense, but their starting pitching has just really have been depleted from injuries. Adding Mike Leake maybe will help, but you have to get Paxton and Hernandez back.
Oh, no question about it. Now, I want to talk about Aroldis Chapman. To me, if the Yankees want to go far, he has to be there.
I agree.
And he's still throwing 100 miles an hour, but he's getting hammered. Why is he getting hammered? Is it location? Frank Robinson always taught me it's always location.
Yeah.
What's the problem?
It's location. He cannot locate his fastball, and his confidence is shot. I think Girardi did a great job because they have the ability to, you know, they have like three guys could actually close down there, and
right.
two of them that have done it before in Betances and also Robertson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you watch him, and, you know, his breaking ball is not that great, but, you know, it's just good enough to make the hitters aware, oh, he's got another pitch. I've got to be aware of it, even though it's 90-some miles an hour. I can't sit on 103 all the time. Now these hitters, because everybody's throwing in the upper 90s, and some guys are even hitting, more guys now are hitting triple digits. Hitters are used to this. They're used to seeing high velocity. So they're geared up for the 103 or 100-mile-an-hour
right.
fastball. And when you're not locating it, and he's just throwing, he's a thrower. He's
right.
not a pitcher. He doesn't locate his fastball at all. And then all of a sudden you can see the confidence just, you know, leak out of him. You know, when he gave up a home run when they were playing the Mets to Rosario, the shortstop,
right.
and he squatted down on the mound, still had a one-run lead, you know, I felt like, okay, what is this guy doing? You know, you can just see he's just shot. He's done. He wound up getting the save. He had to cover first and almost, you know, looked like he was injured or whatever. But confidence-wise, shot. You know, he has to get that back somehow. And, you know, now the Yankees are playing meaningful ball every single night. They have a really tough schedule going forward. I think 6 games out of their remaining, 29, are against teams that are going to be out of it. And I think that's the Blue Jays. And I think that's it. I mean, they're the only team that
right.
they play that aren't in playoff contention. They need him. I agree with you. They need him in that ninth inning if they're going to go very far.
I want to ask you this. Last year, it seemed like you can get to Chapman mentally. Last year, he was, quote, overused. Mm-hmm. And do you think that came back to haunt him this year?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I've been a guy in the bullpen that's always thrown, you know, 60-plus to 70-plus games. And, you know, you do get tired down there, but mainly you get tired from throwing multiple days in a row. Or if you throw two innings and then you're used the next day, you might be tired the third day. But, you know, I don't understand how, oh, you know, these guys might be getting tired this time of the year, because you work your butt off through the winter time to prepare this for this, and also during the season to prepare yourself for a long season and also getting into the postseason. I never thought he was a guy, even last year, that could get more than four outs. I said, if you're trying to extend him more than sometimes three, I said, you know, leave him at three. He's great then. He's not good with coming in with men on base. Right. He's always giving up the runs. We saw it in the Giants series. We saw it in the World Series. He's more of a three-out guy. That's it. And they tried to extend him. I mean, because, you know, you look at Madden again, he didn't have any confidence in anybody else down there.
Correct.
He's not a Miller. I mean, Miller can do whatever you want. Andrew Miller can do whatever you want. Chapman's a ninth inning guy, and that's it. If you try to extend him anymore, he's done. I don't know if that hurt him. You know, he still has an electric fastball. Mechanically, he's all messed up. You know, Rothschild for the Yankees is a great pitching coach, and I know they're doing everything they can to try to dial him back in. But, you know, if the Yankees are going to go very far, he needs to be the closer.
I got to ask you this. The Yankees of the 1990s were the standard in terms of winning championships. What do you have to do in terms of winning it, to have a great bullpen? What do you have to do?
Well, you know, you have to have great starters. You know, the game has changed so much because of the pitch count and all these sabermetrics, all the third time around the lineup. You know, we don't want your starter facing these guys because the averages go through the roof. So they try to build deeper bullpens. The Yankees have done that this year. You know, now they have a deeper bullpen. You have Green, you have Adam Warren, you have Canely and Robertson and DePatansis and Chapman. I mean, these guys are nasty. And their starters, hey, give me five and we're good. When we played, we had a deep bullpen, but our starters were horses. The pitch count wasn't really, as close as it is looked at now. Mm-hmm. You know, usually it's about 120, 125 pitches. Right. And like I said, these guys, you know, Pettit and Clemens and Wells and El Duque, I mean, these guys trained to pitch that much. And they didn't want to come out of the game. They knew we had a good bullpen and we were going to try to wrap it up for them and get their win. But they thrived in going 7 and 8 innings. And that made our bullpen even better. When you try to limit the amount of outs that your bullpen has to come in to try to get, then you have a great bullpen, you have a great pitching staff. And that's one thing we had. I mean, we had guys, we had starters that would give you 6-7 innings. We would get complete games every now and then to give us breaks. And you have Ramiro Mendoza, Stanton, myself, Rivera. You know, we weren't as deep as probably the Yankees are now, but as far as starting staffs, you know, there was nothing like it.
Now, the Dodgers are being compared to the 98 Yankees and to 2001 Mariners. Are the Dodgers that good, or what do you think?
Well, I mean, it's funny because you look at the Mariner team, we didn't finish it off. And we had a great offense. We had a good bullpen. But, I don't know if anybody can name even a starter on that team, you know, in the rotation. We won 116 games, and it's just confidence. We had a great chemistry team. The Dodgers are really good. You know, you see all the guys that they bring up in the minor league system, and it seems like everybody, they're just striking gold and hitting lightning every time. You know, you have Taylor, you have Bellinger, Seager there at shortstop. Everybody that they bring up, Turner is having an outstanding year at third base. You know, even Puig is really buying into the concept and doing a great job. You know, they are good. You know, they don't have Kershaw and they don't even have Darvish. I mean, they're doing it with, you know, bits and pieces and scraps and whatever to try to win this thing. They've fallen a little bit by losing four in a row, five in a row, and they got swept by Arizona. So second series in a row that they've lost. So, you know, I signed with the Dodgers out of high school. So you have a little soft spot. It's like, yeah, you know, I really would like to see them in the World Series, but I don't want them touching our record. Man, how about you want to win 113, win 113, but don't get up there around us.
But, you know, I thought they were going to be good, but I didn't think they would be that good.
Yeah.
Did you feel the same way?
Yeah, you know, anytime the Cubs, they were comparing the same thing last year, and especially right around the first half, they're like, oh, this is a team that's going to win 116. And then, I mean, they won 102. That's how tough it is to try to get up to that level as far as wins. No, I don't think anybody saw that they were going to be this good. You figured, okay, they're going to, you know, maybe win the West, but it was going to be a closer race. It's all of a sudden now been, you know, they're just easing their way into the playoffs, which I think could be you know, could be a little of a disadvantage for them, because then next thing you know, you're playing playoff type baseball and you got to flip that switch, and it's really tough to do. And no matter how good of a team you have. But they have, I mean, they score multiple ways. They can score on the home run, just like Cleveland. They can make things happen on the bases. They've gotten good pitching. Canley Jansen is, you know, between him and Kimbrel, they're the best closers in the game right now. They're just that nasty. And they do have a good bullpen. And it's fun. You know, I can relate, because it's fun going to the park. And those guys are having a blast just coming to the park and putting on the uniform, and they can't wait to play the other team. Because they have the confidence that they can beat anybody. And when you have that, you can go out, and most likely everyone, you know, you're going to wind up winning more than not.
As you know, you need a great bullpen to go all the way. Looking at this year, who has the best bullpen, and who has the bullpen to go far in the postseason?
Well, you get Andrew Miller back, and I would have to say Cleveland again. You know, they do need good starting pitching. They need those guys to be healthy. But as far as bullpens, I think the Indians have one of the better ones. Even the Yankees, you know, when you play the wild card game, anything can happen. You know, you could just have a bad night. Next thing you know, you're going home. I was looking at the Yankees, and I said, you know, if they can get into the division series and play a long series where it's a best 3 out of 5 and even go further, their chances, I think, are really good, because they do have, you know, they do have good starting pitching. You take Tanaka, who's thrown really well. You have Severino. You have Sonny Gray. Even CeCe Sabathia is really a really good number four. And then you have seven guys in that bullpen. I really like their chances, because their pitching staff is that deep. But because of the experience that Cleveland brings, I think once they get Andrew Miller back, they will probably have the better bullpen. But I'm not going to count out the Yankees, especially if they can get past that wild card if they don't win the East.
What about the closer? We know Aroldis Chapman is not the best closer. Who's the best closer now?
It's either Kimbrel or Jansen out in L.A. And those two are just I think, unlike anybody else. You know, not that they're going to remind me of Rivera. There's nobody like him, but as far as those two guys, you know, I would probably give the edge to Jansen even more than Kimbrel.
No
but
kidding.
Both those guys are just outstanding, and they're just flat out nasty.
The way Jansen pitches, he looks like he can throw every day.
Right, and he does. And he's a guy, you know, I know Dave Roberts would love to try to limit him just to 3 outs, and they tried to, you know, get more out of him in the playoffs, and it worked for a while.
Yeah,
but he probably could. You know, he's a guy. And even Kimbrel can give you 4 or 5, and that's about it. But you want to try to limit him even to just 3. But the way Jansen has thrown this year, you know, he's a guy. He's a strike thrower. He doesn't walk very many guys, hardly any at all. I would probably give him the edge as far as the best closer. He's fun to watch.
I know we're in early September, but if you had to pick a world champion now, who would that be?
Oh, man. You know, I really like the Dodgers. You have to watch the Cubs, because the Cubs are playing really good baseball now, and Madden's got them clicking on all cylinders. I think maybe because the Dodgers, even though they're that good, you look at their September schedule and what they're going to be doing. They're going to be playing meaningless baseball. They're already going to have the best record in the National League. They're already wrapped up home field. They're going to win the division here in the next 10 days or so. But it's usually the hottest team that winds up going the furthest. And you know, Arizona would not count out. But I really like the Cubs, only because, you know, you see their offense is starting to click in. You know, the pitching staff's starting to figure things out just a little bit. It's hard to pick between the Dodgers and the Cubs. But I think one of those teams will wind up playing Cleveland.
Interesting. Jeff Nelson, listen, thank you so much. My next guest is Richard Justice. And he talked about Justin Verlander's first start with the Astros, and he talks about the Apple Watch scandal between the Yankees and Red Sox. On the phone is one of the best baseball writers in the world. His name is Richard Justice. He's from MLB.com. Richard, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, Bill.
Richard, Justin Verlander pitched his first game for the Astros. It was a good game, 6 innings. Talk about the impact this game had and on the Astros.
Emotionally, big impact. He was just what you expected. His curveball wasn't very good, but he competed his butt off. There was an at-bat early in the game. Robbie Cano and Justin Verlander went at each other like two warriors. I think it was an 11-pitch at-bat, 6 pitches fouled off. Neither would give in to the other. 90, 95, 96, 96, 95. And That's what you want, you know, two future Hall of Famers going at it. But a lot is going on with the Astros. They get to come home to see their homes, to be back in their community. They didn't know that they were going to do that last weekend. And in a span of a few hours, they get Carlos Correa back. They get Justin Verlander added to the rotation. And then tonight, Lance McCullers is going to pitch. And this is a big series. This is the way A.J. Hinch would like to line it up for the postseason. Keiko Monday in Seattle, Verlander Tuesday in Seattle, now McCullers tonight. If they get to October and those guys are all what they hope they will be, you know, nothing's guaranteed. Cleveland's playing out of its mind. But they would feel they're as well positioned to go play in October as they could be.
I read your column recently, and you obviously love this trade that the Astros made. And do you think this could take them all the way to the World Series?
I think the way Jeff Luhnow put it, that he's the general manager of the Astros, is that, you know, it's a roll of the dice in October, because Cleveland's really good. And, you know, if you're going to face Chris Sale in Game 1, well, you know, your chances, you know, even a team like Texas, Bill, you look at it, they could line up Hamels, Cashner, and Martin Perez or somebody. So, you know, October's completely different. It's about grinding it out. But what the Astros have done, they've gotten their mojo back. They're healthy again, and they've been the best team in the American League for most of this season. They've got a slight lead now in the Indians, who've decided never to lose another game. So you got a chance to go play. This is a franchise that has never won a World Series game. Not a World Series. Has never won a World Series game and only been to the World Series once. This is a good team they have now.
Now, speaking of hot teams, again, you talked about the Cleveland Indians. You know, as we record this, they've won 13 straight, and the Diamondbacks have won 12 straight. Now, it seems they want to become the best teams in baseball.
Right. You know, and somebody said, does it matter what you do in September? Jim Leland always said, don't tell me who's won the most games. Don't tell me who was the best team in April, May, June. Tell me at the end of September who's playing well and who's healthy. And suddenly Arizona's got Grinke and Robbie Ray, mm-hmm, and Patrick Corbin at the front of the rotation. J.D. Martinez has been the best pickup. I just off the top of my head, Tim Beckham's been a pretty good pickup. J.D. Martinez has been the best pickup so far, and they're just rolling. They're not going to catch the Dodgers, but, you know, they're going to pitch Grinke, I would think, in game one of a wild card game. And then they're going to pitch Robbie Ray against the Dodgers. And Robbie Ray's been doing pretty well against the Dodgers.
Yes, he has.
Against the Dodgers lately. Same thing with Cleveland. They don't allow any runs. They just don't allow any runs. And this guy, Jose Ramirez, last year we asked Terry Francona, like, what did he mean to you this year? You know, you didn't have Brantley. He said, well, basically, he saved our butts. And it's not that simple this year, because Encarnacion is a great player, and Lindor is a great player. But that guy is pretty good. And so on the first day of the season, we probably would have thought Cleveland was the only perfect team in baseball. They're not perfect without Andrew Miller, but they are really good. And the way Trevor Bauer is pitching, stepping up behind Kluber and Carrasco, and now Salazar is going to be back. And those aren't just pitchers. Those are boys that make life uncomfortable for you. I mean, they throw hard, and they're not afraid to come inside.
Wow. You know, the second wild card spot is now up for grabs in the National
Crazy.
League. And, you know, it seems like Colorado doesn't want to win it now. So how do you explain all that?
It's a long season, and I never saw the Diamondbacks taken off the way they have to just basically take over that spot. Bill, the Twins had a sell-off. They're running kids out there every
mm-hmm.
night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been unbelievable to watch them play like that. The Angels lose everybody. The Angels get wiped out by injuries. And now Trout's playing like better than Mike Trout has ever played. And he's one of the best three or four players you or I have ever seen. Garrett Richards is now back from the disabled list. I don't know. Baltimore, you know, I thought Baltimore was the last place team in the American League East. Now the way Bundy's playing, pitching, Gausman, Bundy, Miley,
right.
The back of the bullpen is great, and Machado. I think I always think like you got to have one guy that's playing out of his mind. I go back to seeing George Brett in the postseason a couple of times. You got to have one guy playing out of his mind, and Mike Trout's playing out of his mind, and Manny Machado is playing way out of his mind.
Right.
And hey, in Minnesota, Byron Buxton has become what we thought he would be. I mean, it's for people who've never seen him, he's one of the most amazing players you'll ever see. Like, if you watch him play a game, you will see everything. You will see the speed, the defense, and just a guy that, you know, young players don't come with a timetable, a guy that's figured it out. And he, all those years when he was the couple of years he was the number one prospect in baseball, the Twins have a pretty bright future with that young guy.
Oh, no doubt about it. And what about the Rockies? I mean, they've been slumping lately.
Yeah, it's been, you know, they've gone through some things with their bullpen, and there's been some hiccups in the rotation. And I think, I can't say it's stunning. The difference between Arizona and Colorado was running young starters out there, whereas Arizona had Greinke and Robbie Ray, and even Corbin, you know, has been around the block a few times. And Arizona's got Archie Bradley's emerged as a shutdown reliever, and you know, Greg Holland's had a hiccup or two. Mm-hmm. So can they hold off Milwaukee? St. Louis, Bill, if you look at a St. Louis box score, you'll go, who are those guys? I never heard of these guys. Harrison Bader and DeYoung and Valera.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, so it's going to be chaos in September. And for people like you and me, that's good.
And the final thing, Richard, the Apple Watch controversy between the Yankees and Red Sox. Is this a big deal, or should teams be punished for this? Talk about it.
No question teams should be punished for it, because stealing signs is part of the game. Stealing electronically. Okay, if you can steal the signs, you and I are friends with Frank Robinson, and Frank gets to watch a guy pitch for an inning. I'm probably exaggerating a little bit here. And he would knew what was coming out of the guy's hand. And I think there's an instinctual thing among some of these veteran guys that just instinctively know. But when you're stealing it electronically, that's different. You're stealing it from the catcher. If you're at second base and you're stealing from the catcher, the location of the pitcher, all that, well, guess what, boys? Change your signs.
Right.
I mean, you should be able to prevent that. But the electronics of it is over the line. And I know Commissioner Manfred said it's been going on forever, back to 1951 and all that. It's part of the gamesmanship. That's fine. If you can do it in the gamesmanship of it, you can't do it electronically, you know. And it's going to be a continuing problem. I'm surprised. This is just the first chapter. As the electronics get more and more sophisticated, teams will figure more and more ways. So the commissioner's going to have to pop the Red Sox in the kisser pretty substantially and just say, hey, we can't have this.
Wow, that's amazing. Richard Justice, listen, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Bill.
Scott Boras has made millions and millions of dollars for his players, but he still would like to see changes in the game of baseball. Here's what he had to say.
On the phone is the best agent in all of baseball. His name is Scott Boras. Scott, thank you so much for being on the show.
Bill, it's a pleasure to be with you and your audience.
Scott, you know, when people call you the most powerful agent in baseball or even all of sports, how do you feel about that?
Well, I think for me it represents that I have the privilege to be involved with some of the elite athletes of the game I love, and you know, it's certainly been a path over the last 40 years where you have the opportunity to work with the development and the maturation and the success and the accomplishment and goals of men in baseball, and that really is a privilege. And I've got a staff of over 100 people that are really, really good at what they do, and we're able to assist, I think, players at being really, really good at what they do, optimize their skills and their approaches to what they do. And it's certainly been a great learning curve over the process, too. And I'm very, very pleased that the outcomes of a lot of our clients' careers have turned out to be really what they desired. And that's really our job for them.
No doubt. And Scott, what's interesting here, before you became an agent and before you were a lawyer, you were a professional baseball player. Your batting average was pretty good in the Cardinal and Cubs organizations. What made you give up on it, and what happened?
Yeah, I was, I played in the Cardinal organization. I had some pretty good years when I came in, and I had my first knee operation, then a year later my second, then third. And back then they didn't have arthroscopic surgeries, so these things were rather complicated. And it got to the point where they were draining my knees when they played. After 4 or 5 years, I was able to hit and do things, but I was a center fielder. They tried to make me an infielder, and it, and I had people in the game, Bob Kennedy and George Kissel, and my managers were Hallinier, Kenny Boyer, Jack Kroll, and I had really outstanding educational system to teach me the game of professional baseball. But for me personally, it got to the point where I went to law school after my third knee operation. However, the Cubs still kept me under contract and helped pay for my law school, and I credit Bob Kennedy for that, because he did everything he could to allow me to educate myself and yet also keep the opportunity for me to play if I so desired when I came back after my third operation. But but essentially with my knees, it just got to the point where I wasn't functional as a player. So I just continued in law school.
What lessons did you learn from your minor league days that you give those lessons to your clients?
I think the one thing I learned was, when you go to spring training and you have to make teams and you feel the pressure of the game and you watch men, I watch 40 men get released in one day, and I always tell players that this is not a career, it's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that the mental part of the game, the preparation part, we have excellent coaches that are with the players day-to-day in professional baseball. And really they take care of most of the physical part of the game. And my role is that I learned a lot from a mentor of mine, Harvey Dorfman, who spent years in the game and was highly successful with two world championship organizations, and I later hired him. And he taught me so much about the mental approach, the psychology of a player, the game, the perseverance, the dealing with really how the game starves you from success, and how you prepare a player to take on an everyday part of life that has so many ups and downs during the course of even a week or a day, and that part, preparing a stability, a foundation, a platform for players, I think is very important.
Right. Now, before you became an agent, you were a lawyer. You were defending drug companies against class actions lawsuits. Now, why did you get out of that to become a baseball agent?
Well, I went to work for a major law firm, and they represented drug corporations, and I have a medical background as well as a legal background, and so it was something that typed me into a particular field and in law. And the truth of the matter was is that working for major corporations is that I like working for people directly. Mm-hmm. And my teammates came to me that I used to play with, Bill Caudle and particularly Mike Fishlin and Keith Hernandez, they felt that I understood the game at a different level than the people that they had representing them. Plus, I was a lawyer, where most of the agents were lawyers. And lo and behold, I was doing arbitration cases and found out that it was a chance for me to stay close to the game,
right,
and to be involved intimately with the game and to help players. And so it really created a legal practice for me that was very much what I wanted as a lawyer, and obviously with my passion for baseball, that it allowed me to continue in the game and I think create a balance for the game. Obviously, the part of the symmetry of the game is to grow it and grow it correctly. You have to have an equilibrium that exists between management and players to allow the game to grow in appropriate direction.
Any changes you would like to see in the game of baseball?
Oh, I would really like to see us improve, you know, how we address the World Series. And so it's not a regional event, and it's a planned event, and it becomes a, you know, a World Series week in one city where you could really involve corporate America, make it an international event where someone knows where to go well in advance. You could have games there, you know, seven in a row, where you or five in a row, whatever, where a whole group of people know that not only if you don't go to the game, there's a bunch of events that surround the game, and you can have viewing areas and things, and everyone may go there for a week, but they have a chance to go to one game and view it in other arenas and such, and really make that city vibrant. And it's kind of like, the you know, in the Super Bowl they have one game. In the World Series, you have a chance to have in a city an event that would take place five, six, seven times. And I think for corporate America and the international media, it would be an opportunity to really grandize our sport. I've always told people, because of the fact that we don't know where the World Series is going to be, you know, it's like fast food. We're serving the greatest steak of the game at a fast food restaurant.
Right.
We only have a couple days or so to prepare, right, as to where we really know where the World Series is going to be. And I never quite understood why we would serve our greatest dish of the game in that way, because it can be done so differently and so much better. And the home teams, you know, the teams have an opportunity all the way through the playoffs to enjoy their club personally, and also there's tickets that can be reserved for the hometown fans if they want to travel. And I just think more people are going to get to see World Series because there are many fans that never get to experience it because their team is you know, never going to be in the World Series. I think the other thing that we need to really, really address is that we have revenue streams that are really coming to ownership in the game, and we have to work hard on getting the greatest athletes into our sport. And what we've done with the draft and the limitations, we're having a difficult time competing with the NFL, the NBA, and even the NHL in getting the greatest athletes when they make youth decisions to come to our game, and we really have to review that.
I mean, what can you do to make those players come to the game of baseball?
Well, I think it has to do with the bonus structure. The bonus structure in the other sports is now far and above what it is in baseball, and that is really what allowed baseball for years past to bring in the greatest athletes. Parents know, you know, in baseball you can't get a full scholarship. In baseball now, you're now going to get a minimized bonus compared to the other NFL, NBA, and other sports. And this has created a focus for parents to direct their children at prime ages, at 14, 15, 16, to other sports. And when you do that, the best athletes and their parents are looking at greater opportunity for their children and by playing other sports. And so it's discouraging. You know, we have a system where the international player was benefited more than the American player on the entry level system. And the other aspect of it is that the owners are making more and more money, and yet we have chosen to invest less into the entry level. The thought process is one where it's enough, but if you're involved in the platforms of the youth arena, and you've been a parent yourself, would you want your son to go to the NFL and get double the entry level, or the NBA, or hockey, or would you rather have them play baseball and because the guarantees are a lot less and the scholarships are less? So the platform for baseball right now is very challenged in the youth market.
Draft pick compensation will no longer hurt free agents. How do you feel about that? That's a good thing, right?
Well, I think in our game, you know, it's funny. I went and I gave a lecture, and someone talked to me about why fantasy baseball is so enjoyable, and the answer is they can do what they want. Mm-hmm. And I think what we find is that by allowing, you know, the restrictions that we place on, you know, players, few players are ever going to get to free agency because the average major league career is 2 to 3 years. And when you get 6 years in the major league, you should certainly have the right to have an unrestricted free agency. I think from the player's point of view, you know, we have a system that allows owners to really utilize the players for 6 years. And the players have to prove themselves to be of such a talent and value to reach that. And so it's rare. It's a very low percentage of the players that reach free agency, maybe 15%. And so when you do attain that, you should have every right, because you earned that, to solicit your services to, you know, the 30 major league teams. And on the other side of it is that the owners, you know, there's just little or no evidence to suggest that though there are some organizations that have more economics in the game, we know that, and they may be able to hire more free agents. And in some instances, that works out well. In some instances, it doesn't. You know, that's the forecasting and the diagnostics of the qualities of each individual team. But there are other clubs that have used mid-level free agents or a few superstar free agents to build a franchise. But what we're seeing is that right now under this current system, there is a gross amount of mediocrity that's occurring in the game, and that is these formulations that you have to lose for 4 or 5 years are supported. And we don't want to ever support a system which promotes in the game a quadrant of the league to essentially malperform, because it really disrupts the process of our divisional winners and outcomes. Because if you have a couple franchises that have said we're going to go into a rebuilding program for 4 or 5 years, and most of these programs, by the way, do not work. The idea of developing a player and, you know, without signing free agents to go with it, when you study it, you understand that a complete development process with no free agents is usually a failed process.
Right. You have some players that could be free agents or looking for contract extensions. I want to start with Carlos Gonzalez. You know, he's not having a good year. How do you see his market?
Well, first of all, I don't discuss about free agents and, you know, specifically, but I can say that, you know, in free agency, when you have players who have had a year where they've gotten off to a bad start for a couple months and then they come back and play well, you know, you have, it's really the eye of the ownership as to how they view the player and what they do. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a player who's been playing 8-9 years in the league and he's done well for all of that, and all of a sudden the, you know, for the first 2 months of a season, he doesn't play well, Well, I can find you close to every major league player that has a time in their career where they have a lengthy and unexplained slump that goes on, and these are Hall of Fame players.
Right.
And so it's kind of normal in a career that you experience that, and if it's understood, I think the ownership and the team contracting with the player understand that, particularly when this happens early in the year rather than later in the year where they kind of resurrect themselves to the norms of how they played in the past, it's a little bit easier to explain.
Right. Bryce Harper, talk about how valuable he is, how great he is, and, I mean, can he really be the first $300 million player?
Well, I don't well, there's already been a $300 million player, a couple of them, actually, because really A-Rod's contract was that way, and obviously with that. But to what levels a player receives, Bill, it's really about good business, you know, because you've got to look at these contracts and say, and what we do, you know, we see them in the NBA, we see that it's good business to pay athletes whatever the value is for them to receive. And why is it good business? It's because there are revenue streams. And when you have iconic players, they increase your TV ratings, they help you win, they help the value of the franchise increase, because there are players that, you know, that have a skill set, they have a dimension about them that is so far afield from everybody else in the league. And in Harp's case, playing in the major leagues at 19, when you go back and look at the number of players that have done that and have been successful doing it, they're usually Hall of Famers. And then you go in, and they're great players, and they lead and give. You know, they bring to a franchise more than performance. They bring an economic equation to it that is beneficial for the franchise on a number of fronts. And if an owner believes that, then obviously it's good business for him to contract with a player and pay him appropriately to the benefits that he's received. And if not, then I don't think a particular franchise should do it.
He was obviously having his best year, in my opinion, this year. Will we see him again this year?
He's throwing, and, you know, our goal here is to take his time so he's ready for the playoffs and move forward on that. But, we're very encouraged that the incident, it's unfortunate that a bag is wet, and that it created really an unsafe playing surface, having a base, playing after rain, where it's, I don't think they're monitored correctly. I think our system has to change as to how we address that, and we really need to make amends to make sure the player safety is at the forefront when we play in inclement weather.
He really lucked out there. He really lucked out.
Yeah, we really did. He's an elite athlete, and I think his ability to, as you see when he hit that bag and slipped, to drive himself upward, it took the force off the knee and allowed him to, recover much quickly from this and really limit any long-term damage to Bryce. So we're real hopeful that he'll be back at it before season's end.
Scott Boris, listen, thank you so much for being on the show. It was great having you.
All right, Bill, good talking to you.
Take care.
My next guest is Dustin Pedroia of the Red Sox. Let me tell you, he's happy to be back on the field after missing time with a knee injury. Dustin Pedroia, thank you so much for being on the show. Dustin, first of all, how good is it to be back on the field, and how's the knee?
It feels great to be back out there. It's feeling better. We're still doing all we can to make sure it stays that way, and I'm able to be out there and help the team the best I can.
For people who don't know, how did you hurt the knee? And no matter what happens, you've had a productive season this year, I think.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it. It was just one of those things where a couple instances, where it kind of got twisted in a wrong way, and and then continuing to play on it, while it was kind of beat up, kind of caused it some harm. So, you know, it got to a point where it needed some downtime, and you know, that's where we were at. And you know, I rehabbed it and built up backup strength to hopefully be able to support it the rest of the year and get through and be on the field for us.
You think you'll be good for the rest of the way?
Yeah, absolutely. I hope so. I mean, you know, obviously it's a lot of hard work to you know, get to where we're at right now. So, you know, absolutely, I'm confident in that.
Dustin, every time I see you play as if it's your last inning. You play, you play hard. And where do you get that work ethic?
I don't know. I mean, that's how kind of I always played. I was brought up by my parents. So, you know, I enjoy playing the game, and you never know when you know, someone's going to take the jersey away from you. So, you know, you always want to play hard and play to win and respect whatever job you're doing. And my job's to play baseball. So, you know, you kind of take pride in going out there and playing hard every day.
How special is this team? I don't think no one expected you guys to do this well after you lost David Ortiz to retirement. How special is it?
Oh, we feel we have a great team. You know, all year we guys have grinded. Our pitching staff's been unbelievable, you know, both starters and bullpen. You know, we're very athletic. We run a lot, play good defense. So, you know, we're pretty excited about the team we have and looking forward to what's next.
Is this the best pitching staff you've ever been on? I mean, you've won championships with some good ones, but is this the best one?
Yeah, but it's up there. I mean, we you know, to this point, I mean, it's just a matter of continuing it and doing it throughout the playoffs and things like that. So, but yeah, you know, the starting pitching depth, our bullpen, back into the bullpen. I mean, we got a pretty good, you know, staff.
How special is Chris Sale? He's come as advertised.
Yeah, he's. I mean, just from facing him when he's on the other teams. I mean, he's tough. You know, he's a guy you don't enjoy going to the field that day and looking forward to facing. So, you know, we're definitely glad to have him. And you know, every time he goes out there, you know, we feel like we got a great chance of winning.
How far can this team go? I mean, like you said, it's a special team, and how far can it go?
Our goals here every year are the same: is to try to win the World Series. So, you know, hopefully that's where we go. You know, that's what we're trying to accomplish. And, you know, we understand that it's very difficult, takes a lot of work and some things to bounce our way. But, you know, we're looking forward to trying to do that.
Talk about the nice lead you have over the Yankees. To me, it's a good lead, and you guys could clinch pretty soon.
Well, I mean, you know, we understand that they have a great team. There's a lot of great teams, especially in our division. I mean, anybody can get hot right now and play well. So, you know, we're just taking it one game at a time and trying to win that game and play the game the right way and continue to get better. Even though we've played so many games, there's still room to improve and do things better as a team.
What's the key to the rest of the way for this team?
Playing fundamental sound baseball. I mean, pitching, play good defense, you know, have a solid approach at the plate. I think if you stick to what has gotten you there, you know, you'll continue to succeed. And not coming out of, you know, our element and trying to do something we're not capable of doing, whether that's trying to hit a home run or the, you know, little things. Just execution. I mean, that's the name of the game this time of year.
Final question. You've accomplished so much, an MVP, two world championships. What else do you want to accomplish?
I'll just continue winning. I mean, that's the funnest part of this sport is when if your team wins the last game and you get an opportunity to share that moment with all of them, because there's through every year there's ups and downs. It's like a long journey, and you know, you to win that last game, it means a lot, because you've definitely been through a lot together, whether that's injury or performance or just everything. You just want to find a way to win that last game.
Dustin Pedroia, thank you so much. My final guest is Rajay Davis of the Red Sox. He wants to be a World Series hero once again. Enjoy the podcast. Rajay Davis, thank you so much for being on the show. Tell me what it's like to be with the Red Sox. How much are you enjoying it?
I mean, this is ideal situation, you know, that I'm coming into. Obviously, they have been a good team all year. You know, they, you know, obviously in first place right now, and hoping, high hopes to finish strong, finish with a good spot in the playoff, and you know, push for obviously a World Series, and that would be you know, ideal, considering coming off of last year's World Series and having a lot of fun there.
Now, you have a reputation now of being a big postseason player. Does it hit you of what you've done, what you did last year? You did a lot.
Well, I think it was fun to me, you know, just being on a winning team that was able to go as far as we did and be in a position to win even at the end of Game 7. And just to be that close is definitely it puts a taste in your mouth, like a taste that you like and you want more of. And so you want to experience that again. I think we have a really, really good team here. I think we have the best shot at being able to do that.
Now, you with the Indians last year, obviously, you came so close. How much did that hurt? You were really an inning away from winning it all.
Yeah, I think it didn't hurt as much considering what we left on the table. I mean, we
had a lot of injuries.
Yeah, a lot of injuries. We gave it all, even with what we had. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it wasn't enough, you know. But it was a great series. Our teammates then they enjoyed it. I don't think anybody was really hanging their heads on our side of that, because that could have really went either way, you know. And that was. It was one of those games where, you know, you just got the right guy in, or just hit it just past the third baseman. You know, he makes that play, it's game over. You know, it's like, I mean, you just those little things, that's when they show up the most.
Tell me what it was like to hit those home runs, and especially in Game 7.
I think the experience was an overwhelming experience. Nothing like I've ever can compare to or experience before. You know, it's just an exciting moment to be able to share with guys you played with all year long. We're talking eight. We got spring training starts in March, so we're talking about 2 weeks in February, you know, all the way through to the beginning of November. So you spend a lot of time with these guys, every day with these guys, and to be able to spend that moment, that special moment, with these guys was something special. When those guys were, you know, coming around third base and looking into the dugout, you know, which is on the third base side, and seeing, you know, three quarters of the team outside of the dugout. I know this is something special. Celebrating, jumping up and down. They were excited. I was excited. The entire, you know, our crowd, our stadium, you know, erupted. And kind of I could feel that, just that energy in throughout my body.
What was it? How tough was it to leave Cleveland?
It was a very, very tough decision. Because we liked it. We really liked it there. My family liked it. I have kids. I have two kids, so. They liked it, you know, and it was very tough. And but I think when it came down to it, I think we made the best decision for our family.
You were with Oakland earlier in the year. Tell me the reaction. You were in Baltimore when you got the news that you were traded, and they had made the announcement during the game. What was your reaction?
Well, I was surprised. I was really surprised because I had put it out of my mind. But in the back of my mind, I was hoping that, you know, I felt like, you know, I could possibly help a playoff contending team, and I could help them get further. And so that's what I felt in the back of my mind. And when it happened, I was really, I was happy, you know, because I was coming out of a situation where obviously we weren't going anywhere and we weren't trying to go anywhere, just considering the fact that we were, you know, trying to see what we had with the young guys. And, you know, we had a lot of talent over there in Oakland when I was there, you know, just watching these guys develop and, you know, helping these guys, you know, become major league, you know, baseball players, you know, that can play a long time, you know, because the talent's there.
Tell me what it's like to be teammates of a Chris Sale, Mookie Blaylock, Jackie Bradley Jr. I mean, this is a talented team.
Oh, obviously. I mean, I think it's something for me. I can learn a lot from these guys. These guys who've already themselves as good Major League Baseball players and winners. So I'm looking forward to learning a lot more and getting better.
Do you realize you added a few more years to your career after what you've done last year?
Well, I mean, I'm just thankful that I'm able to be in this position. I'm able to just help, I just look forward to at least allowing my son to watch me play at this level.
How old is he?
He's 2, so hopefully we can get a few more years in.
I think you'll do that. Yeah. Listen, thank you so much.